Hi, it's Sierra Miller. I can't wait for you to check out my new collection of shoes and accessories at Designer Shoe Warehouse. If you love shoes as much as I do, then trust me, I got you. From cute sneakerinas to the perfect flip-flops to stunning heels, these shoes are all style, no drama. It's a girl's girl summer, and DSW has just the shoes. Shop the Sierra Miller collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
I feel like we've all been taught to be scared of the sun, avoid it, reapply constantly, cover up immediately. But recently, I started questioning that. The sun actually plays a role in things like your mood, sleep, and hormones. So I'm not avoiding it anymore. I'm just more intentional about what I put on my skin when I'm in it. A lot of conventional SPFs are filled with things like hormone-disrupting chemicals, seed oils, and synthetic ingredients. So I started looking for something simpler. That's what led me to Primally Pure's SPF. It's super minimal, only 9 ingredients, using non-nano zinc, plus really nourishing things like tallow and mango butter. I've been using their sun cream, and it honestly feels more like skincare than sunscreen. Lightweight, not chalky, and just easy to wear. So if you've been rethinking your sunscreen, Primally Pure is one of the best places to start.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
So, Duke fans, welcome to the Devil's Den podcast. I'm your host, Josh Smith, joined by my co-host, Raul and Shu. Figured we would come back and do a little bit of backcourt talk. So I've really been wanting to do this for quite a while, fellas. But obviously, if you haven't been kind of tuned in recently, John Blackwell has officially kind of pulled back out of the draft as expected here. So now the roster is pretty much set from the backcourt side. So we figured we kind of get in here and talk about it. There's been a few interesting quotes this summer, y'all. We dug into it maybe a little while ago, but the idea of Duke having 4 point guards. So we're going to get into that. And for the purpose of our conversations, we're really kind of classifying the backcourt here as the main 4 guys here, as John Blackwell, Caleb Foster, Caden Boozer, and Deron Ruby Jr. So those will be the 4 that we're going to kind of be considered here. There might be 1 or 2 guys. Maybe you consider Dame a part of that, but we'll kind of push him down to the wing spot here for a little bit, fellas. But I guess we can get into it. So obviously we've already kind of went over Blackwell himself, so we're not going to do a full preview on that. We are going to have Brian Geisinger come on here in the next week or two and kind of deep dive more specifically into his game. There's a great article up that he's done, another one over 247 as well. So feel free to check that out. But fellas, let's just start here. We've pitched it already, but in your opinion, does Duke have 4 point guards? You're buying any of that?
Yeah, not me. I think it's 2 at most.
That's kind of where I am too. It's like, clearly Caden Boozer, I think, is the de facto point guard. You could argue that Caleb Foster is also a point guard. I mean, he ran the team as a starter to great success for a lot of last year. Now you can debate whether he's a natural point guard or more of a shooting guard, but he's clearly capable of running the team, getting us into actions, and, minimizing mistakes and stuff like that. Rippy, we'll have to see. I kind of tend to think he's more in that Caleb Foster kind of combo thing, but, all we have is high school tape at this point. But he's a guy that you're expecting to play the least of the 4, not to jump ahead here, but so would he really even count as, a point guard there either? And I think John Blackwell is pretty clearly not one. That's kind of where I'm standing at.
Yeah. And I think I would go with Caden. And look, I haven't saw a lot of tape on Rippy, but I would put him more in the point guard class than Caleb, even though Caleb's done it for us. I think Caleb's more of a game manager in that sense, where he's not really looking to set people up and facilitate. He's just there minimizing, you know, turnovers and making the right plays, but not really necessarily getting into the lane, probing to the lane to throw an alley-oop to Pat way that Caden would, right?
Or
you know, he's going to kick it back out for open threes, but I just don't seem like his main goal is to be, let me get to this spot so I can set this guy up.
Yeah.
And maybe Rippy, is that how he plays? I'm not real sure yet. So,
yeah, I mean, Rippy's definitely explosive, and he has, 100%. Like, I think a lot of his game is predicated that he needs the ball in his hand, or maybe he doesn't need it, but he's probably most effective with it in his hands right now, right? And so, but sometimes that can just get you as like a de facto point guard. I mean, we can dig into it a little bit, and obviously we'll see. Like I've mentioned, some of the high school stats, it's really hard to, you know, how much you take away from that, how much you look into that, how accurate some of that stuff is. For the purpose of me, though, like, I'm looking at it like, well, who are you when one of these other guys is on the floor? Because any of them can be a point guard, right? Like, you could put them in a system and call them your point guard. Blackwell might could be a guy like that, right? But, like, if Caden's on the floor with Blackwell, who's the point guard, right? To me, it would be Caden, right? Like, same for Caleb and any of these other guys. And so I wanted to kind of dig into it for us, because it's like, well, no, I don't think we have four point guards. Now, all of them might have the ball in their hands and be asked to do different things. But to me, it's Caleb and Blackwell are the two that like most easily slide off the ball, right? Like that you could play them with any combination. You could play those two together, sure. But I think those two most easily fit if you're looking for a two guard, an off ball guard. I mean, to me, Blackwell is really just doesn't profile at all as a point guard, really. So that was a bit, I don't want to say it's concerning. It was a little odd to me that seemed to be kind of one of the primary pitches. So we'll see what that looks like and how John plans to use him and what their kind of strategy or what their thinking is. But most of his damage, I mean, he's really lethal off the ball, man. And he really does so much as a spacer that even if he's good on the ball, can he be good enough to offset like what else he could offer maybe at a different spot here? But maybe just curious for y'all, I don't know where you want to start with either of these guys, if you want to kind of get into it one by one here. But for me, it's like, I don't expect Blackwell to play too much as like him being like the only like elite guard out there on the floor, but maybe I'll see that differently.
If you look at it, Blackwell played 34 minutes per game. And he only averaged 2.3 assists. That's a 13% assist rate. For perspective, Caleb Foster, who we're saying is kind of not a natural point guard, was up at 19%. So significantly higher. Caden Boozer's up at 22%.
Yeah.
So that kind of just gives you the feel of who is more pass first of those three guys. You know, like Shu mentioned with Rippy, it's like really hard to, or maybe that was you, Josh, really hard to find anything from high school. All I found was his stats for the year from 2025 when he, not even this most recent year, but his junior year when he won New Jersey Gatorade Player of the Year. And he was like at 16 points, 5 assists, 5 rebounds. So, you know, not this like 10 assists, like kind of, you know, loading up the assist kind of guy. I don't think we've even have that in Caden, to be honest with you. When you compare his assist rate to like a Trey Jones, we haven't had a guy like that in a while, right? Like 31% assist rate. But Caden is clearly the most pass first, the most kind of just setting up the teammates of any of the guys we do have.
Yeah, and he seemed to really just, you know, when you're watching him, especially towards the end of the year, but even there are times in the beginning, like his ability to probe and to be reactive and responsive in the lane is something that as a freshman, you don't really see that often, and you're hoping as a sophomore that's going to even continue the pedigree there for him. And then to me, you pair that with the rim finishing, you pair that with the floater that he has, and just that, like with weapons around to spray out to, I think to me, when they said that we have four point guards, it's like, well, I can maybe make the argument that they only have one, or like that they really should have a primary one, because Caden is the least, I think, healthy when you move him off the ball, right?
Yeah, like because of the shooting.
It really sucks it down versus him spraying out to Blackwell, who's 48% from this corner, or Foster, who's going to shoot like 42% from the other one. it's, or you have Caden who's going to shoot like 28% from there or 30% from there, right? Like, it's just not as healthy. And so I think that just lends itself to like, well, if this is going to work out, then to me, Caden and Rippy are probably the two that you kind of have to put it in their hands a little bit more.
Yeah, because Rippy was only 3-point stats I could find for him were 34% in EYBL play. So that's not quite, and that's a high school line too. So that's not quite at the level you would want for like an off-ball guy. But Foster's a 38% career 3-point shooter. Blackwell's around there on even better volume. So those guys could clearly play off the ball a little bit easier, I think.
And the way I look at it, Caden is the true point guard on this team. Like, he's been a floor general. That's what he's kind of been bred to do. Caleb, as we've alluded to in the past, like, he was a point guard, and then he really became a scoring kind of guy, like a combo guard. And he really just hasn't been able to mesh that together at Duke. You know, John's talked about it to us in the offseason about wanting him to be a little bit more aggressive looking to score, but, you know, also, you know, if he's handling the point guard duties to be setting guys up. Blackwell, I think this all stems from the Jeff Goodman interview where he talked about, you know, seeing himself as a point guard. And maybe, you know, for him to play at the next step, that's what he's getting the feedback. You know, that's the position he would look to play. So he's just kind of putting that out there. I think Rippy is obviously the most athletic of all four of those guys.
For sure.
I mean, you look at him, you know, across the board, you know, and obviously I'm basing this off of highlight reels, which I know are, you know, that's, you don't take that for what it is, but, you know, he plays off of 2 feet. He goes up, two-hand hammers the ball. Like, you don't see that for a guy that size that's not obviously very athletic.
Yeah, I mean, what, Blackwell had 0 dunks last year or something, whereas Rippy's whole highlight reel is full of dunks. So,
and like,
just there,
right? Like, he'll really get out there and go after it for you. Yeah, so, you know, I think we're all pretty much in agreement a little bit here. And you can call them all point guards or whatever, all guards. But to me, just the profile of Caden and Rippy just seem to track a little more over in that range. Yeah, Blackwell, to me, that's like the Evans role with maybe an increased volume, right? Or you take Slim, you take Jared McCain, you take what we've seen John do with players like that. And to me, Blackwell kind of slides right into there. He does got a little bit of like more of a mid-range game. I'm curious to kind of see what that might would look like. Fellas, I guess that can segue us a little bit. The other topic that I wanted to get into is the versatility, the play style. We haven't seen like really John have like a backcourt or a roster quite like this. We've tended to utilize a lot of creation from the mid to high post under John, a lot of like big forwards coming up, a lot of big kind of initiating. This roster seems to kind of invert that a little bit. They still do got guys like, you know, Pat, who's obviously going to kind of demand a lot of that as well. But you have to think that at some point this might flip given the roster, the depth, the quality here. What do y'all kind of make of the variety as it relates to like what John might do systematically?
Well, I think you kind of pointed out this is different than what we've seen in the last several years. Like, Flip was our initiator. Then you go to Coop, who's kind of doing it all. You know, I think you got Cameron Boozer, who's essentially your power forward / point guard. So this year to run things, I think it looks like he wants to run things through the guard position. I think it's just going to have us where maybe we don't stall out on offense quite as easily as we have maybe in the past when it's, you know, a big guy kind of running it. Things can get kind of mucked up. Maybe you get a guard. You know, look, I'm thinking of senior Jeremy Roach, who's, I can get into a spot, you know, get in the lane. I know Rippy's really great at like getting paint touches almost anytime he has the ball in his hand. And that's going to do a lot to, you know, to collapse the defense where you're spraying it out to shooters. Obviously, you know, Blackwell's going to step into that Isaiah Evans role. I think that's what we brought him for. We're looking for him to score the ball. So, you know, Caden just kind of probing, you know, we know what Caden can do when he gets into the lane with that floater, get all the way to the rim, or, you know, if the defender comes up, he's got a lob threat to Pat. So, you know, there's a lot of options that I'm looking forward to seeing what John does with these guys.
Yeah, you know, on one level, I think maybe we won't be getting baskets as reliably at the rim as we have in previous years. So maybe you could see the overall field goal percentage go down a little bit, but having multiple guys who can create from the perimeter does make it easier when a good defense shuts down your actions. Like as much as Pat's passing is a weapon, and I think it will continue to be, and I think we'll still run a lot of stuff through him from the high post there. If they're cutting off the backdoor cuts and that kind of thing, it's not like Pat's just going to take his man off the dribble, right? So having multiple ball handlers, I think we've seen Duke have a lot of success with that in the past. You know, when you just look at some of the title teams, a lot of them essentially had 2 point guards, you know, whether it's Nolan Smith and John Shire or Quinn Cook and Tyus Jones or Duhon and Jay Will or whatever, you know, just long lineage of that. So it might be kind of an effort to get a little bit more back to that. I'll be interested to see whether Caden's assists do actually jump way up, because like you mentioned, last year, Cam Boozer was the assist leader and the de facto point guard of the team. And we're also running a lot of stuff through Pat and Malik as well. So maybe he does take a big jump as a distributor. I don't know. Be interesting to see.
You guys also mentioned, and I just want to mention, this is the first year Caden's played without Cameron. And
that's kind of why I started doing this whole thing, is I was starting to think about, like, okay, he's out of that. And I don't want to call it a shadow. But there is one, right? Like figuratively and literally there from that standpoint. So he gets an opportunity here. But I think, man, you mentioned on something of some of the offensive roles or some of the, maybe so much of just like missing shots or like some of the whoops that we can get into. And you start to look back through kind of John's lineage here as a head coach. And outside of Roach, who still, you kind of had to, like, you know, you had to spur him up the court. Kind of Caleb Foster's a little bit like that. You kind of have to, like, hey, bro, come on, go. This gives you a little bit less, like, where you can play a little bit more instinctual. You can play a little bit more creative. You have guards that can get up and go. When your offense is kind of predicated on, like, hey, we got to get the ball up, and then we're going to run a little mini action to get Cam the ball here or Pat the ball here, and then it's going to get set up. Or we're going to run a little two-man to get Khan the ball on this side or Coop over here, but then we're going to get – that just takes a little bit, right? You have to kind of set that up a little bit versus if you have 3-4 guys who just kind of instinctively can – when I get the ball in open four, I know what to do. And I think Caden and Rippy are both that. Caleb at times can't be that. Blackwell, I don't really know, but you just think of the pedigree as like, okay, this guy's coming in as, you know, a senior, basically, right? Like the pedigree's there. But for the other two, I'm hoping that it really will allow us to, I don't really care if we play so much faster, but when their opportunities are in the open floor, to be able to capitalize on that, especially if you got a guy like Dame who's going to be streaking, a guy like Cameron Williams who's going to gazelle down the floor. Even Charnowski looks like a pretty fluid athlete when he's going up and down. I want those guards pushing hard. A guy like Boomche to just be trailing for a wide open three if he's in the game or something like that.
Cam Williams should be good at running the floor too, I would think.
Yes, yeah, just gazelle-like, just getting down there and going. I think the depth is there. Go ahead.
I was just going to say another interesting thing to think about is, you know, when you look at guards under John Shire, you know, Jeremy Roach, I guess, to an extent, and maybe Caden Boozer a little bit last year, but you're not getting a lot of guys who, a lot of them are more off-ball movers and cutters. When you think about Tyrese Proctor, Con Knipple, Jared McCain, Isaiah Evans, he has this type where he just loves guys who kind of move really well off the ball. And I think maybe John Blackwell could do a little bit of that this year, but all four of these guys seem like more on-ball threats than maybe we've kind of, you know, consistently had in the past under Shire.
Yeah, I think that's fair too. I think Blackwell could certainly see like that part of his game really get elevated just at Duke, because John's going to really probably want more of the movement stuff. We've ran flare screens pretty religiously for the past 3 years or so. So I do expect kind of some more of that. I think it's going to be interesting too, just to see like what kind of like initial base sets we kind of start out in. Like, is it going to be a lot of like high pick and roll? Are we going to get into like, are we going to go back to the, a lot of the Spain stuff that we were doing a couple years ago? Or is it like, what's it going to look like really? I'm really curious about that too. Cause again, you do have Pat that's there and you're still going to utilize that as a weapon as well. So, Lots of options there. Fellas, I do want to kind of get into some comparisons, though, as we talk about the depth. But maybe this is probably a good time as any, right? Let's pay some bills, take a little quick break. We'll come back, and maybe we'll look at some of the historical Duke backcourts.
You know that thing where you get an amazing pair of shoes at a really great price and want to tell everyone about it? Yeah, so do we. Here at Designer Shoe Warehouse, we'll give you something to brag about. Like the latest styles from brands you love, or the trends everyone's obsessing over, or shoes that make you feel like, well, you. So go ahead, show off a little. Find shoes that get you at prices that get your budget. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today. DSW, let us surprise you.
Meet your moment of calm. Primally Pure just expanded their Blue Tansy collection, and the new Blue Tansy Body Butter is already a ritual rooted in real life. It's cloud soft, it melts into the skin, and it's made from scratch with real biocompatible ingredients your body actually recognizes. Grass-fed tallow to fortify your skin barrier, mango and shea butters to replenish moisture, and beeswax for a breathable layer of protection. For mornings that feel full, for days that don't go as planned, for moments that seem chaotic, return to calm with skin that feels restored, protected, and buttery soft.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
All right, fellas. So another guy we didn't mention in this, I mentioned Dami at the front, and I just want to go ahead and clarify too. Bryson Howard, we're not really including him in this. I do kind of consider those more on the wings. Maybe you call Blackwell a wing as well, but for the sake of this, again, it's just those four. I started thinking about just depth in general. And to me, it's like playable depth, right? Like, I think there's a really clear path where three of these guards could play anywhere from like 28 to 33, 34 minutes a game here. And I think by all intents and purposes, most are expecting Rippey to maybe not play that much. But I think, you know, according to what we've seen, I don't think he's going to get DMPs, you know. Yeah. So I think there's going to be like opportunity there. Maybe it's 8 minutes one night. Maybe it's 20 minutes one night if he's cooking, like whatever's there. But so you have four guys that are like really seeking to kind of make an impact on this squad. So I'm curious for y'all, how does this kind of stack up to maybe some of the deeper kind of Duke backcourts that come to memory? I mean, I don't want to give them all away, but there's several that I was looking at. You go to the late 90s, you go to the mid 2000s, then you go to kind of the early teens there a little bit. Fellas, anyone that stuck out? We can get into some of the particulars here, but.
I mean, the one that jumped out to me is the 2015 team, because you got Tyus Jones, Matt Jones, Quinn Cook, Rashid for three quarters of the season.
Yeah, true. You did have Sheed there for a little bit, yeah.
And Grayson. So, you know, that's a pretty stout lineup of playable guards. I think this is the most we've had since about then.
That's a good question. I actually didn't think about 2015 because I was like 14 because I forgot about Sheed leaving the, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. When I was thinking about 2015, I didn't even really factor in Grayson, but by the end of the season, he's playing major minutes in the Final Four in the championship game. He's been inserted in the game when we're down seven at a critical moment in the second half. So you really do have to count him. Other ones that jumped out to me were 2011. Now that's hurt a little bit by Kyrie getting injured, right? But in theory, if he had played the whole season, you really have, you know, four guys there in Kyrie, Nolan Smith, Seth Curry, and Andre Dawkins, who were the kind of just off the bench shooters, but they still played a major role.
And Tyler Horton played a lot when Kyrie was out. Yeah. He probably wouldn't have vice versa, but still. I
mean, as the kind of defensive specialist there. And then 2017, I think, is another good one. Grayson, Luke Kennard had a fantastic season, amazing season. Frank Jackson was really good off the bench, 10 points per game, 40% shooting. Matt Jones was still on the team too, of course. So, you know, that's four guys right there. So those were the ones that I really thought of. You mentioned the 90s. What do you got, Josh?
Yeah, I was just thinking if you went back, you know, and this isn't like quite as deep of those, but you go back to 95, 96, you got Wojo, Capel, and Collins all on that squad right there, right? You've seen what they do. You go up two more years, you got Wojo, Avery, Trajan, and There is one more. Would you?
Yeah,
was Carroll? Well, no.
Yeah, Carroll, you don't really count Carroll. You don't really count Ricky Price. So yeah, I guess it would. Yeah, just kind of those three is the, and then the 2011 one I think is the big one. The other one that I think comes to mind for me is like the 07, 08, 09 kind of cluster there on the front end of that. You had like Greg Paulus, John Shire, Gerald Henderson, DeMarcus Nelson. And then you swap Nelson, you bring in Elliot Williams a year later, Nolan Smith. So you have like four. Now you can say that DeMarcus Nelson was playing power forward at 6'4 on those teams, and you would be correct. But hey, for all intents and purposes, he came in kind of as a shooting
guard. Yeah, he was
guard.
A guard. Yeah.
You know, those teams had a lot of depth. I mean, Elliot Williams took Greg Paulus' job there for a little bit, right? Like Nolan and John and G. Maybe you consider Henderson a wing. That's fair. Yeah. If you do. Yeah.
Well, if you're going to lump Henderson in with guards, then you kind of could just throw Bryson Howard from this team, right?
That's true. Because
it's kind of a very similar archetype, you know, like 6'5 kind of wing player who's like guard forward hybrid, I would say.
Yeah. 2014, you mentioned 15, but 2014 also kind of came to mind because you had Thornton, Rashid Suleiman, Quinn Cook. Don't really consider Rodney Hood there, but you had Andre Dawkins too on that squad. So like you had some depth really in there, but it's been a while since I think we've had anything kind of close to this. And so, I mean, you stack them up and there's some good backcourts that we just mentioned, but this one seems like it could be right up there in terms of
production. Grayson, Duvall, Gary Trent. I don't know if there was a fourth. With them, I guess Alex O'Connell would have been with those guys.
Joe Baker would have been with those guys too, maybe, or no?
No, Baker was a freshman with Zion.
It was Zion and them, right? So, okay, yeah, that one wouldn't have worked.
Yeah. I mean, you know, honestly, depending on what you want to call Con Knipple, the 2025 team, like I look at a lot of those guys as more wings, like Sion. Yes, he ran point for us, but he's more of a wing. And Con, like, he ran some point for us too, but he's probably more of a wing. But if you're calling Sion, Tyrese, Khan, and Evans all guards, then
that's fair.
It just gets into this territory of like, what is a guard and what is a wing? I think that the four guys we're talking about on this team clearly are more in that kind of 1-2 mold than they are like true wings. So I think it's a bit different.
Yeah.
Well, in the 2015 team that I've mentioned, I mean, all those guys are in the 6'2 to 6'5 rent height range, which is what these guys are in, right?
Exactly.
Blackwell might be 6'5 maybe.
Yeah. One we didn't mention that we'll give a shout out to real quick is the 2012 squad when you had Andre Dawkins, Seth Curry, also Rivers, Tyler Thornton, and Quinn Cook all on that squad. Yeah. That's five guards that played a lot. Two of them are national champions, right?
Well,
Seth. You know, was
I guess in that one, in the situation with that one, I guess Quinn didn't play a lot that year, though.
Not a ton.
Not as freshman.
Yeah,
not a ton. But still, I mean, this stacks up there. I mean, that's still only like there, and I'm sure there's historians out here. If you really go back in the archives or so, I'm kind of just basing it off of like who I remember seeing and playing live here, right? So there might be a few others in there that we missed. I mean, 2003 always is like a blackout year for me, but I don't really consider Dante Jones like more of the guards that we're talking about. He kind of slides down a little bit for me as well. So, yeah, I think that's, I mean, only six or seven squads that kind of even remotely match what we're looking at coming in. So that's going to be interesting to see, see what John does with it, see how he wants to play and what that looks like a little bit. But, all right, fellas, let's do a little bit of projections here. I kind of maybe sold where I was at a little bit earlier, but where are you at in terms of, and you don't have to give me decimals or anything here, but just an odd kind of, you know, a close lumping of like a minutes projection here. Like which of these four do you expect to kind of carry the most minutes per game, I guess would be a good question.
I mean, I would go with Blackwell for the most minutes because I think that's obviously the role we brought him in here was like to be our scorer. And I think Caden and Caleb are going to essentially do what they did this year for a lot of the time, just kind of split their minutes. You know, one night it might be, you know, Caden playing 25 and Caleb playing 17 or 18, and then it flipped the next game, something like that. And then Rippey, as you mentioned, I don't think he's going to DNP. I think he's going to fight for minutes. I just don't know how many is going to be available to him, especially when you're looking at, you know, how do we play with somebody? Blackwell's going to be on the floor. Are we playing with Sarr, Williams, and Pat? Are we going smaller, maybe going with three or four of these guys? So there's a lot of different ways that John can tinker around with this for sure.
Yeah, I would say if we had like a wing player, like a three who could more effectively maybe slide down to the four, then that would open up more time for three guard lineups. But I just don't know how much time you're really realistically going to see Sarr at the four, which is kind of what you have to do if you want Sarr on the floor. You know, we will see some minutes where there's three guards and like a Boumche or a Cam Williams and then Pat, but I just think we're going to want Sarr out there as much as possible. So that's going to mean that like there's going to be a lot of two guard lineups. Mm-hmm. So for me, I would think Blackwell's going to have to be number one in minutes. Look, he played 34 minutes a game last year. Now that was a Wisconsin team with probably not as much guard depth and talent as this Duke team, but we are really going to need his scoring, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even clear to me who's going to be the second leading scorer after him on this team. Could be Caden. We saw like late in the year, he averaged around 15 points per game once he started playing major minutes. Mm-hmm. It could also be Pat. He could make a big jump up to like 15, 16 points per game, but there's nobody like really proven there to me besides Blackwell. So I think we're going to need him out there for like at least 32 minutes a game. And then I think Shoe's pretty spot on. Like I would expect Caden to probably get the start over Caleb this year, but I still think that they're both going to play, you know, somewhere between 23 and 30 minutes a game, kind of just night to night, it'll fluctuate.
And then
for Rippey, I think like maybe
10 to 12. 14,
yeah. 12, yeah.
10 to 15, yeah.
I think that's, for me, I'm definitely in agreement. I think Blackwell is the clear, like, I don't know how many of these four are going to start, but he's the only one where I really feel like he's just locked in at the two, right? You just kind of locking him in or as a guard there, one of the two guards that are going to be out there. He's kind of locked in to that for me. I mean, you don't bring him in not to, you need some alpha scoring, I think. I mean, I think his ability to just be a microwave and to be kind of a consistent microwave, to be a guy who could average 20, 21, 22, and it really just like we need that almost because a lot of the other guys on the roster to me look like they profile as like needing some attention elsewhere. I kind of think of like, yeah, it's a little bit different, I guess, of like how the Celtics played maybe a few years ago where like Tatum was just when he was like MVP level. It was like everything worked, but you had to have OKC maybe like 3 years ago or so before the depth really blossomed. And it was just SGA just kind of had to be that guy. And everybody kind of just tinkered off around that. Even happened a little bit like in these playoffs, but their depth now is just absurd. But I think you get what I'm saying here is that we kind of need him to do that. Like we really, I think the value of the other guys is just, I don't see any of them like kind of spike charting too much here. Like I see a lot of consistency, like Caden, Caleb, Pat, even guys like Charnowski, Dame. Like I see a really consistent like 8 to 12 that you can just bank, right? But I don't see a ton of those guys like popping for 30 or going up, like, just really riding that. So I think we're going to need Blackwell to kind of be the guy that's sitting there north of 18, 19, 20 pretty regularly. Because I think you're gonna, as chart as like a volume type guy. But
I was going to say, I think you're going to see a lot of balance in the scoring after Blackwell.
Me too. Yeah.
Like I would expect Blackwell, maybe he doesn't average as much as he did at Wisconsin, like overall, like on the season. Maybe you go for 25 on a given night, but maybe he's more like 17 points per game instead of 20. But then you're going to have a lot of guys in that 8 to 12 range. Like that's kind of where I see Caden. I see him on the higher side of that, maybe like 12, 13. Caleb's probably going to be like 10 points a game or something like that. Yeah. You know, Pat, I just don't think he's a self creator enough where he can really average 18 points per game because he's just going to need to get the ball fed to him. And he's going to be doing so much of the offensive like initiation from the high post that we're not going to be posting him up a ton, I don't think. So he's probably going to be in that 12 point per game range. Yeah. And you just kind of see that across the board. I expect Sarr's points to jump up from like whatever it was, 6 or 7 to like 9 or 10. But I don't expect this huge spike from him.
Right. Like 12 seems like almost kind of like maybe the season, or maybe 15 if something just, if he has a absurd shooting year or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If he just, you know, gets really hot from 3 or something. But I just don't really see him like creating a lot off the dribble. We saw that that's already a kind of an area of concern for him. So even if he improves that, he's not going to suddenly be like shaking and baking guy.
Right. And I know Boom Boom is all over Twitter now and everyone's just slobbering him. The kid looks great and there's a lot of things to be. At the same time, he's still 17 and this is college basketball, which is just a different beast. It's a different animal. It plays differently. It's officiated differently. Like everything about it is different. I think he'd be really good. But I'm not willing to kind of just say that he's willing to come in here and just take that. The only other one that we kind of mentioned briefly, but would be if we've undersold Bryson Howard that much. I mean, when we had Ben Pfeiffer on, like it really had me kind of rethinking my entire like projection for this kid. And I'm pretty high on the kid, but I was always, it's like a year two, year three. If he is somebody that's like not just all projected potential and there's like real substance to any of that stuff, again, you're still probably putting him in that 12 to 15. But if at a certain point, if you have so many guys in that range, then you might, maybe one of them does start to elevate, I guess, at a certain point. But it just, I don't, all the other guys seem just kind of, they're comfortable in that pace, right? Like, I just don't see Caleb Foster going out there and all of a sudden taking, you know, 6 to 7 more shot attempts per game or something, right? Which is kind of what it would take to bump your average of 4 or 5 points here. Like, you kind of, you have to get really, really efficient, or you got to start kind of taking a lot more shots. And a lot of these guys don't seem like huge shot takers.
I don't think,
but not shot takers really.
I don't think that's Caleb's mentality. I don't think it's, you know, Dame's mentality really either.
It's not even Caden's really. Yeah. I mean, he's more so than those guys, but.
Yeah.
Well, to go back to your Bryson thing, like I don't know a lot about him. I haven't seen a lot of film on him. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me. We've seen a couple of guys. Look, Khan was
athletic hell too,
Khan was somebody that, you know, came in. We thought he was going to be behind Isaiah. Jared McCain came in as the 23rd ranked recruit or whatever and was dropping 30 on people. So would it surprise me that Bryson, because I think the when they just redid the rankings, he's in that teens, like somewhere 13 to 17, 18 range. So like, you know, obviously a great player, but maybe not what you're expecting to be a top 10 pick like Ben was, you know, alluding to.
Yeah. I think it'll depend to me on like how much self-creation can he actually do, because it's really hard to average a ton of points if you're just going to be like a spot-up shooter. You know what I mean? You got to really, I mean, we've seen guys do that. Like, again, like McCain was primarily an off-ball guy and did, you know, his second, was he second on the team in scoring? Maybe he was third, because I know there's Roach on that team. And then there's,
I think he got up Kyle second. So, yeah, okay. I want to say he got up a second. Yeah. I mean, he was like our first option there the last like seven
by the end of the season.
I mean, he was like, we put him on ball a lot too at that point. The James Madison game is one just to go back and just watch just for fun there. That's a great
and shout to him. He's doing it and
in the fourth quarter the other night. You know, came up there and just tried and not just shooting either. My guy came up here and head faked and put a little chicken wing into Wimby's chest and finished on him, man. Like, that's like Wimby. Yeah, that's Vic out there. Like, that's big time stuff. So shouts to Jared, little LOL affiliate over there. But and so I guess we've kind of hit it on it here, but is anyone expecting anyone other than Caden to lead us in assists per game? Do you think Blackwell could do it just based off of this usage that he might get over here? Or to me, it's kind of Caden, and anything else would be maybe a little disappointing, shocking, or.
Yeah, I mean, it's Caden to me, and, you know, maybe a sneaky Pat gets 4 a game, you know.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I was even just talking about just these 4 guys. Yeah, Pat.
Potentially. But sure.
Yeah. But of these 4, I mean, to me, it's Caden, right? I mean,
yeah, of the backcourt guys, it's clearly got to be Caden, because I just don't think Rippey will play enough. And I think that, you know, Caden's going to play around the same as Foster, and he's a better passer than Foster, and he's like more, takes more risks too, which lead to a higher assist total. It also leads to more turnovers, but at the same time, that's where you rack up your assists. Blackwell, again, like, it would be a big departure from his previous playing style if he suddenly started playing that way. And again, I don't know why we would even want him to, because like you mentioned, then what is Caden doing? I just think he's the clear cut assist leader.
Yeah. I think we're all in agreement on that one. Best defender. I mean, to me, I'm going to go Caleb Foster on that one here. I mean, I haven't seen too much of Blackwell's defense, but just looking at some of the measurables, you're already at a little bit of a disadvantage just kind of coming out here a little bit. So to me, I mean, it's kind of Caleb by a pretty wide margin. Anything different from you all? Or
I will say that Caden did improve.
Caden got better. Yeah.
Caden did get better for sure. Yeah. He's got good size too. I mean, he's got a good size for the one. So all these guys do. They're all like 6'4", 6'5", other than Rippy. It's like 6'1" or 6'2".
6'2", maybe. Yeah.
Plays maybe the most explosive of any of them. Right. So, I mean, it was that.
And that was something interesting I read in his scouting report too. I didn't know that he was like kind of thought that scouts thought highly of his defense. Yeah, you know, I kind of always assume, he's a 6'1", 6'2" guy. He's probably not going to give you a ton defensively. But that could be an area where he earns his minutes, right? Like, if he's not able to differentiate himself offensively, if he can come in there and hound the ball, I mean, just reading from Adam Finkelstein's thing, it's like explosively athletic lead guard who can set the tone on the defensive end of the floor. He pressures the ball, picks up the length of floor, gets over ball screens, and is ideal at the point of attack. Yeah. So if he can actually, if that translates to college, there's minutes for him doing that, because Sarr can't guard the ball for all 40 minutes.
Right. And I mean, we all know John is kind of, you know, tries to stay two steps ahead of things, that he's got his mind and his hand in his pockets and all that good stuff in the NBA kind of circles as well. And if you have been kind of paying attention or watching any of these playoffs or kind of following along, there's a big, big trend kind of happening right now. We're putting small dudes on big guys, because they can get up underneath them. Like, Wembanyama has been guarded that way. Jokic was guarded that way a little bit. Like, they'll put some of these just stocky, study, like, six, just smaller guys and get low and say, okay, if you want to shoot it over the top, go ahead. But as soon as you shoot it, I won. Like, if I'm getting Wemby to take a jump shot, even if he makes that 37-footer, the process of the defense wins, because you cannot allow this guy to just kill you at the rim. Like, you cannot allow that to happen. So they'll put a lot of these smaller guys on there and just try to blow you up, just try to get up underneath you, maybe take a flop, whatever. But it's worked a little bit too. Rippy could be a guy, man, that you could have out there, and you could play him as a wing almost if you just wanted to kind of try to put him on this dude, see if you can get up underneath him defensively, go try to hawk something at the rim, go kind of like come up, be a little Grayson. You know, Grayson was allowed to kind of be flying around and reckless a little bit.
Tyler Thornton.
I would tap into Rippy's athleticism. If you're going to run some two-point guards from some two small guard stuff, you can throw Rippy a lob. Like, you can have him come off a curl and just go back, like we did that play with Slim and Pat against Michigan. Like, you could put one up there and he'll go punch it. He might be the only one of these guards that you could actually do that for. So, you know, I can see some cool stuff with like him and Pat together on the floor, him and Charnowski maybe, kind of, or him and Cam Williams doing some kind of stuff there too. You have to protect him and kind of insulate him and simplify some of the stuff, but there's a path for him to be a pretty consistent player on this team.
You don't have to be huge to be a good defender at guard. Right. Think about one of our better defensive backcourts in recent memory is Trey Jones and Jordan Goldwire. Both those guys are 6'2".
But would hound you.
Yeah,
I mean, exactly. Hound
get up in you. Yeah. Yeah, Nolan Smith wasn't that big either, if I recall, like 6'2" as well. Wingspan was a weak there, I think. But, I mean, a lot of the times it is those kind of scrappier dudes. And I think the personality, the makeup, the profile of him, he's going to be hard to keep off the floor, just because if you're bringing that type of energy, especially if you're doing it defensively and you're a ball handler, there's just value. There's just value in that. So,
I really like that he, has bought into this whole thing despite the guard depth and despite the fact that he's ostensibly kind of been recruited over a little bit. I don't know what he is actually thinking, like, deep in his heart or anything, but at least he's saying all the right things publicly, and his dad is on Twitter a lot and been kind of as vocal as anybody about, like, look, we're not concerned about that. We're just happy to be in a, you know, winning environment, do the process, all that. He'll get minutes if he deserves them, that kind of stuff. So
good. Yeah, his dad's going in the dad hall of fame already.
Great follow on Twitter too. Love everything about, and hopefully they're, and I'm sure he is able to see, like, okay, you're going to come in here and play against, like, one dude who just went through the draft process, who definitely has goals for the league. Caden absolutely has goals of playing professionally. I'm sure Caleb Foster does as well, and he's a senior. You're going to get the experience, and you're probably going to get a really, really great opportunity year two to just, here's the keys. Or if Caden's back for year three, then you figure that out, right? You figure what that could look like. And you go from there. But
and not to get on a tangent, but year two, you would have Boomche. Is Sharnowski a junior? Is he here for 2 years, or is he just one?
Well, I think he is here for two, right? Yeah.
Either way, you know, you're coming into a situation where, yeah, it might not be all here right now, right away, but you're getting valuable reps coming in, hopefully, in year two with a lot of guys that return that you're playing alongside with again.
Yeah, Sharnowski's only a sophomore, so he'll be a junior this year, and then he has 2 years of, okay. I think he might, did he redshirt, maybe?
Yeah, as a freshman, so that's the reason. Okay, okay. Because he didn't play it all that year, so this is technically his fourth year of college, but this will be his third year that he's using.
And if the rule changes, you know, maybe you can get another one out of that, sure, too. But yeah, you're right, dude, you have a lot of guys on here. I don't want to make this about that. We'll talk more. We've already talked about it a little bit, but we'll talk again, but the setting up for the continuity of this roster, you kind of have to like a lot of that stuff too. I mean, that you could see four or five of these guys run this thing.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see, though. I mean, we are recruiting some point guards too, so that is something to factor in. I don't know. We're pretty involved with Beckham Black. So he's a 2027 guy, number one point guard in the class, number four player overall. So if we land him, I think he would have the inside track to start, but maybe you can sell Rippy on, like, look, all the other guards on the roster pretty much are going to be gone. So you guys just play out there together, and we're not going to call one of you the point guard and the other the shooting guard or whatever. But they could certainly play together.
Tyus and Quinn and Nolan and John, yeah, just sell them on that.
And when you have a guy like John Shire that is like, hey, obviously what he's been doing as a head coach speaks for himself, but it's like you're literally walking through the hall on the way to Cameron and be like, oh, that title, yeah, me and Nolan won that.
Yeah.
Playing two guard. Like, when you have a guy like that, they can get out there and show you and like, hey, here's what we're going to do. I think it just sells. I think that just starts to sell. But
and they would have different strengths too. Beckham Black is more like a Chris Paul type, really savvy kind of pick and roll manager, not super athletic maybe. Whereas Rippy is like this explosive athlete. So I think it would pair well together if that did happen.
Yeah. I think Rippy is swattable. You just kind of have to kind of figure out what the shooting's going to look like.
Yeah, that's the swing factor there.
That's the thing. Yeah, that's the piece. All right, fellas. We went pretty long here. There is a few other things on here that I guess we can spend a few seconds on. I did see this as well. So looks like Duke's going to Fog Allen for an exhibition, which is pretty awesome. I wish that wasn't an exhibition and we could really just, when I first saw the home and home thing, I got super excited. I was like, ooh, this is going to be big time. But nonetheless, I mean, this is right up there in terms of one of the best environments you could put yourselves in. We're going to be slightly biased, but if I'm calling Cameron number one, Fog Allen's number two, and it's not really that close, right? Like, it's, and if you want to say Fog Allen's one, I'm not gonna fight you on it, but we're gonna give Cameron his props here a little bit. But so just kind of thoughts on that. We won't go through the whole schedule. We've talked about that a little bit. We'll do more analysis on that. The summer's great for things of that nature. But fellas, just initial thoughts on John yet again not ducking any smoke and loading this thing up.
Yeah, I mean, look, if it's, you know, I think right now it's still a rumor. I don't think it's anything official, right? It's just kind of what's been floating
around. There's a lot of smoke to it, though. A lot of smoke out there.
Yeah. You know, to me, look, you know, I've went all over the country to watch Duke basketball games. That's one place that I, you know, have circled. Mm-hmm. But if we go, it looks like we played there in 1988, which is about a year before I actually remember ever watching basketball. So I was 3 or 4 years old. You know, I don't know what a ticket would cost and if they would even sell tickets to people that aren't necessarily just, Kansas season ticket holders, it might be hard to get.
We're going to try to get you out there on a press pass if you want to make the trip. I don't know if that happens. They'll do that for an exhibition, but if it's available.
train or drive, if I got to, I'll get there somehow if I can get in the door.
Yeah, I'm sure.
If they played there in 1988, I'm assuming that was the 88-89 season, maybe?
I think so. I think it was like December.
Yeah, so it would have been early in 88-89. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's the year after they won the title. Kansas, mm-hmm. of course, and Duke was a Final Four team the previous year. Lost so that would have been, yeah, must have been a really good game. I love it, even if it's an exhibition. I think it kind of, do you know where Kansas is projected, kind of like rankings wise? Because they got Tyron Stokes, who was like the number one player in the country, but I don't know how much else they have. Obviously, Badunga's gone. That's a big loss.
The rest of the roster is, I mean, I'm not going to talk bad about Bill Self. I think he's a great coach, but the rest of the roster looks like a mid-major team other than Stokes. So I think I've seen them, you know, they're probably still ranked top 20, but it's probably in that 15 to 20 range for most people. The roster is just, it doesn't seem like a typical Kansas roster.
I mean, even last year, it was kind of like you had Peterson and you had Badunga and not much else in the way of quality, in my opinion. You know, they started
solid, you know, Illinois transfer. But look, today it's hard to keep up with everybody because obviously everybody's moving to four schools in 4 years or whatever. But I know they've got a bunch of I feel like it's a lot of mid-major and, you know, not how D1 big time transfers.
So I did look it up though. So it was the 87-88 year. Wow. This was part of the Big Eight tournament back then.
That would have been the Danny Manning team.
This was February 20th, 1988, and Duke won 74-70 in overtime in Allen Fieldhouse. Unfortunately, they ended up beating us that same year in the tournament. And then the next year we played them again in Cameron and beat them 104-70. 102-77. So,
well, they probably
lost the only one that really freaking matters. Man, that's brutal to go beat. Imagine that now. Like watching that now would have been the equivalent of beating Michigan at Michigan and then turning around and losing to them 3 weeks later in the Final Four. Right, like that's a brutal beat, man. It happens, but
Kansas had an amazing run that year. Exactly. So
yeah, and Kay was still knocking on the door, man. But it was right there.
Well, look, I think we'll have the better roster for sure. It'll be a nice test for Dame Sarr to be because he presumably be the one guarding Stokes because Stokes is like a 6'7" small forward. Yeah,
that's gonna be a massive matchup right there. Yeah,
but Fog Allen is such like that place is so hard to play, man. Like even last year, you think about some of the wins that they had at home that they really should not have had. You can just like, you can give them 10 points at home. That's like one of the hardest road environments in my opinion. So,
you know, there's a reason why Bill Self won 14 or whatever, 10 straight, Big 12s because it's like, you did not go, you went in there to die, bro. You went in there to die. And that's just what happened.
And they've never lost. They've never lost on Big Monday or something crazy or insane stat.
I mean, I know that since the Big 12 has kind of expanded, they've gotten some more talent in there. It hasn't quite been that same level of dominance, but it's still Big Self. It's still 12. It's still, you know, Kansas and it's still Fog Allen. So, you can't play a better road game to start the season, basically. Like, unless you came to do.
An exhibition win there would make me feel really good about the team, just like last year when we went into Tennessee for that exhibition and managed to win. Like that was a good, promising early season sign. Now, if we end up going in there and losing by 5, I won't feel terrible about it either. But
sure, all right, yeah.
The only thing that I have bone to pick with last year's exhibition was I honestly thought Cam Bruiser was going to get like damn near 30 rebounds in a game at some point. You know, where he had 20. I think he had 24 points and 23 rebounds in that exhibition game. Like it was,
and that was where it peaked, right? the rebounding.
Yeah,
we never did really see them, but we turned him into a point guard, and so it's
And then look, kudos to like Foster stepped up and got a lot of rebounds last year. And then, you know, you got Big Pat and Sar and some of these other guys. We rebounded from, we quit making it where it was like, hey, Cam, you got to get every rebound. You know, we can't ask him to do everything.
Yeah. I think if you would put him at center on a smaller team, he probably would average 15 rebounds out of necessity. But, you know, that is one of the stats that I wrote down when we were talking about the guards was like how much Caleb's rebounding has improved year over year. I mean, he's averaging like 8.5 rebounds per 100 possessions, which is like crazy for a guard. So, you know.
Yeah. But what's one of our teams that just really lacked the center? Like maybe the 2019 team. Like, no offense to Bolden, but like you put Cameron in Bolden's spot.
It lacked center for that roster.
Or the 2014 team. Where Jabari's playing center.
Yeah, 2007, 8, 9. Any of those, like post Sheldon Williams, was a pretty dark spot, right? In terms of bigs. You put Cam on 2009. That team is filthy, dude. Like, they kind of fell apart and imploded late, but they were filthy, like, for a long time.
Swap him out with Marshall Plumlee on the 2016 team. You know, Plumlee was, like, the only guy with any size on that team. He had some monster rebounding games. I think, you know, Cam would have held it down even better, obviously. That team wouldn't have stopped anybody if Cam was playing center with Ingram at the four and a bunch of guards, but they would have scored a lot.
Yeah, that would have been fun. So, you know, fellas, we'll see. But I think that's a great kind of early exhibition here. We're still several months out, but, like, that's good to have that on the schedule. The schedule already looks, like, really impressive. So we'll continue to dive into that stuff. Like I already kind of teased earlier, y'all, we do have Brian Geisker coming in. He's been kind of vacationing a little bit there, so didn't want to bother him too much. But we're going to have him come in, really kind of look into John Blackwell, and I think Boomche as like our two kind of focal points for Brian here. I know he's done deep dives on both of those, so go check that stuff out.
And I imagine we'll do a front court dive episode just like this one at some point.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. I definitely want to do that as well, especially as the more I look into Boomche too, and then Cam Williams, Charnow. I really like Charnowski too, in terms of like what I think we'll need him to be and what he could be in that role. And obviously junior year Pat is pretty special to get a guy like that back. So yeah, we'll come back maybe again, maybe after the Geisinger episode, maybe we'll dig into the front court here a little bit as well. Appreciate you all. You know, obviously this is the dead period, but we try to come in about maybe not every week, but about every 10 days or so, we're going to try to be in your feeds here. Like last summer, we really appreciated some of the emails, some of the, just ideas. So if you have suggestions, thank you. If you have something that you want us to maybe react to or a topic that you want covered, maybe a particular guest, obviously we'd all, you know, like everybody to come on the podcast here. I'm hoping going to get Coach here kind of maybe late summer, like we typically do. But if there's something in particular y'all want to hear, shoot us an email at thedevilsdenpod@gmail.com. And you can find us on X/Twitter @devilsdenpod247. Stay strong, everybody.